Athens has been around so long that you might say it has reincarnated itself over the centuries. As one of the world's oldest cities, its population had declined to just a few thousand by the early 1800s. Now, the Greek capital's metro population is approaching 4 million. While the suburbs sprawl into a congested mess of bad urban planning, the core of the city, where you'll find the breathtaking Acropolis with the floodlit Parthenon, is quite people-friendly. Ancient Athens now comes with a modern infrastructure ever since renovations went in for hosting the 2004 Summer Olympics. To help orient us to the neighborhoods across the city, tour guide Effie Perperi joins us now from Athens. Thanks for being with us, Effie.
Thank you so much, Rick. Kalimera.
It's so good to be able to talk to you. Kalimera, kalimera. I've been going to Athens ever since I was a teenager. And I'll tell you, I would give it the most improved city award, I think, in Europe over the last couple of decades. How do you feel about the city now, and how has it changed in your lifetime?
Well, I'm not an Athenian, to be honest, but I live in Athens since 2000. So it has made a huge improvement. First of all, one of the number one things that changed the life, everyday life of Athenians is the subway system, which keeps on developing every day. And right now, we don't have the smog that Athens was famous for back in the 80s and early 90s. Mm. So when you're up at the Acropolis or when you're walking around the city, you can see blue sky everywhere.
You know, back in the 80s, I could measure the pollution by how it turned my Kleenex, my tissue paper black when I blew my nose because of all the pollution. And the buildings were covered in grime, and it was noisy, and pedestrians were pushed up against the wall with small sidewalks. Now, the air is clean. There's pedestrian boulevards. It's a people-friendly place instead of a car-friendly place. And you've invested hugely in public transportation. Wasn't the Olympic Games kind of a turning point?
Absolutely, yeah. 2004 was the year where Athens changed its face dramatically, but for good.
Yeah.
Ever since then, they removed all the big billboards which were around Syntagma Square and the main avenues. You're not permitted to do that anymore. We created big pedestrian areas like the promenade, which is right under the Acropolis, which is quite extended. And most of the neighborhoods right now, they have very good signage so people can walk and they can explore on their own. That's all thanks to the Olympics, of course.
Yeah, well, you must feel very good about your capital city. And I wanted to talk just a bit about neighborhoods. First of all, there's a little tiny neighborhood. I think it has like under 100 residents. It's called Anafiotika.
Yeah.
And it's right on the slopes under the cliff of the Acropolis. Can you describe this amazing little it's just the quirkiest place.
Well, Anafiotika is a little gem, you know. It used to be like the hidden treasure, but now everybody knows. Always people say, oh my God, I got lost and I went up to this little street and I have the feeling that I'm in Santorini and not in Athens anymore, that I'm on a Greek island. And that happened because like back in the 1800s, people from Anafi Island, which is right next to Santorini, not touristically developed at all, they came to Athens for many reasons, but mostly for financial reasons. And while they were looking for jobs and a place to stay, this area was offered to them just as long as they would make it look like their island.
Mm.
So they got land for free. The only thing they had to do is to create this whitewashed cubic houses with blue shutters and windows to make it look like the island of Anafi or any Cycladic island.
So the government actually gave them the land on the condition that they would create this charming little fake island community in the middle of the 1800s. That's remarkable. The government was even thinking about that.
Well, it's said that it was like King Otto that gave them
Otto.
This opportunity. Yeah.
So he was the German king that they, when Greece won its independence from the Ottomans, it needed a king. And you have to shop around Europe for a suitable king.
Yes,
I guess
we adopted
one. Not everybody was jumping at the opportunity to be the king of Greece, but Otto, he was looking for a gig. So
yeah.
He came down from Germany, said, hey, we're going to celebrate our heritage. And he funded the workers. You know, it's like immigrant labor. Come in from the islands to the big city, you got a job. And he said, and by the way, recreate your island wonderland right here at the foot of the Acropolis.
And they created a miracle, which is now, it's a little bit of a problem, the fact that this land was given to them for free, because now the descendants of this family, they don't have a title for the property. So it's becoming a little bit confusing for the future of Anafiotika, for how long they will last, because now it's a monument. It's like modern history monument. Right. And they need to be protected. But on the other hand, there are people living there. This is somebody's home.
Yeah.
So who's going to pay the bill when they need to fix something there?
Effie Parpuri is on the line with us from her home in Athens, Greece right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Effie's a private guide who helps me update my Rick Steves guidebooks on Athens and Greece. We have contact information for her with the notes for this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. It's amazing to think about Athens because, as I mentioned earlier, it's a massive city. 4 out of every 10 Greeks live in Athens, 4 million people, and most of it is just concrete, modern suburban sprawl, obviously. But the old town, and that's just like 150 years old, it was just a little community of 5 or 10,000 people nestled at the base of the Acropolis. That's the cute area, and that's called the Plaka, and that's where you've got all of the shops and the traditional Zorba the Greek kind of restaurants and hotels, and it's, to be honest, where the tourists like to be. But let's look at a few other. There is a museum zone behind the palace. Anaktora, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Anaktora is, yes, the word for palace, yes.
Yeah, it's amazing, this strip of museums. To me, that's a neighborhood. Can you describe what we'd find if we go behind the palace and we go to Anaktora?
Well, first of all, we have there a very popular museum, which is a private museum called the Benaki. The Benaki was the private residence of a family that originated from Alexandria of Egypt. And they were collectors of antiquities. And when they returned back to Greece, they decided to build a home for their families, which later on became the home of all these artifacts, from Cycladic figurines to costumes, jewelry, furniture. It's a combination, a museum that has a little bit of everything.
And that museum is called, again, the name?
The Benaki Museum.
Benaki. And then there's 3 or 4 other museums that are literally a block away. One of my favorites is the Museum of Cycladic Art.
Indeed, yes. It is a unique museum. It belongs to the Goulandris family, which is worldwide known. And they have the biggest collection of Cycladic figurines.
And it's really beautifully displayed. And Cycladic means the art of the islands from 300-400 years before Christ, I think. Then across the street is the National War Museum, which I find quite boring and old-fashioned. and it's good because it's air-conditioned. But across the street from that is the Byzantine Christian Museum, which is filled with treasures and, I think, beautifully displayed.
Well, both museums. Actually, the War Museum got a lot of publicity because it opened a brand new cafe restaurant. So they took advantage of an outdoor space they have. And
But it's an indication of what a bad museum is when it advertises its
exactly.
restaurant.
Exactly, yeah. So the Byzantine Museum, it has a collection of multiple icons from different places. It's not very easy for the average visitor to understand Byzantine art in Greece, because they believe that after you've seen one painting, you've seen all. However, the ones that are staying longer in Athens, they want to see something off the beaten track. So the Byzantine Museum, it's another place that gives you a lot of inspiration.
It's another slice of the amazing, many-slice story of Athens and Greek history. And for me, this is for the eager beaver extra credit tourist that has a big appetite for more museums, because there's a lot of forgettable, I think pretty mediocre museums in Athens that are in the guidebooks. But this strip of museums here we're talking about is quite good. You can walk there from where they have the changing of the guard on Syntagma Square. And the big news for me is the beautifully remodeled National Gallery. And it's just a couple of blocks further. To me, it's like the Orsay Museum in Paris, but for Greek art.
Well, this museum just opened again. It was closed for over 10 years after a Picasso was stolen. So thanks to a very big funding, they managed to restore the building and to make it a very modern one. But the exhibition remains the same, with multiple temporary exhibitions which are taking place.
And if you want modern Greek art, it celebrates Greek artists in the modern era. So to me, that's very refreshing after all of the ancient stuff and all of the stones. So, Effie, we're going to continue on our little look at different neighborhoods. There are 3 more that I'd like to talk about. First of all, there's a fancy, rich neighborhood that's close to the Syntagma Square. Tell us about that neighborhood.
Kolonaki.
Yes.
Kolonaki, it's the area that was developed after the palace was built. So in the early 19th century, all the aristocrats, they built their villas, they built their mansions in proximity to Syntagma Square.
Like anywhere in Europe, you want to have the rich people, the aristocrats want to be close to the king, so they build their mansions by the palace.
Exactly. So they took advantage of this mountain, which is called Lycabettus Hill. So on the slopes of Lycabettus Hill is where you can still find some of these old mansions. Well, there is no aristocracy in Greece left anymore, but the buildings exist. So this is a neighborhood that gives you the glory of the past. Mm-hmm. There are multiple restaurants and shops, cafes. It's a meeting point for Athenians.
And the name of that district, the neighborhood?
Is called Kolonaki.
When you have a place like Kolonaki, you have hippies, you've got anarchists, you've got bohemians, you've got people that just want to make a little trouble and stand up against these elites. They must have their own neighborhood. What's that called?
Of course. It's on the other side of Lycabettus Hill, actually. So they both share the mountain. This is Exarchia. Exarchia. Lately, it's on the news again because they're building a new subway station there.
Oh, my goodness.
Which will accommodate the needs of the National Archaeological Museum, which is just a block away from the square.
Okay. And Exarchia is famous because that's where, when all of the anarchists want to get in the news, and if you've got a gripe, they get on their skateboards and their bicycles and they go downhill to Syntagma Square and they'll burn a couple of cars and they'll break some windows and they'll march in front of the palace and they'll make their case. And then they go back to their bohemian quarter and they fill up their music clubs at night. It's an amazing place to visit. Do you find it's, is it safe and comfortable for a tourist to go there?
Not only for tourists, but even for the locals. And personally, I'm hanging out a lot in Exarchia, although I'm not an anarchist. And I'm taking my daughter along, like a 9-year-old.
Nice.
Because it's a place where you can still get the feeling of a neighborhood.
Oh, for
and
sure.
Do you know, have you ever heard of this farmer's market, which is taking place every Saturday?
No, in Exarchia?
Yes, it's the talk of the town. It's a farmer's market that has a little bit of everything. Fruits, huh. Vegetables, meat, but you can find shoes and you can find clothes. And it's the ambience of this farmer's market that attracts a lot of people from other parts of Athens. So they take it like a trip.
Is it like a food fight? Do the anarchists throw tomatoes at each other?
Not yet. They're not interested in food. They only want to play with, you know, the policemen, which are stationed in every corner. So, no, they're not really interested in the market.
And Exarchia is like a Jackson Pollock crazy painting of graffiti. Everywhere mm-hmm. you look, there's graffiti. It's just, there's not a plain wall anywhere. And the parks are where the community gathers. It's like an extended living room. It's really a great place to check out, and it's certainly a free-spirited place. This is Travel with Rick Steves, and today we've been joined from Greece by our friend Effie Pepperi. She's an Athens tour guide. And we've been sorting out the highlights in the neighborhoods of this wonderful Greek capital. The last neighborhood I'd like to talk about is the one that's up and coming for tourists. And it used to be undiscovered. Now it's quite discovered, and there's lots of nice little activities for tourists there. Still very characteristic. It's called Syri, right?
Yes. Syri is just across the street from Monastiraki Square, a very famous place. Everybody knows when they look at the maps, they have it as a meeting point. So Monastiraki is pretty obvious and wide and open. And it's the beginning of the pedestrian area. So right across mm-hmm. the street, a lot of people were not comfortable walking on the little alleys in the beginning because they were kind of dark and they didn't know where they're going to end up. But now Psyri is thriving. Mm. On weekends, you can barely walk, even in the wintertime. So they have many restaurants where they play Greek music, live music, and even more, they're offering cooking classes, so that's nice. Something new, and there are many pastry stores.
I went there as a kid because there were theaters, and of course, it's so warm in Greece, they're open-air theaters, so it's just like a little parking lot that has a big screen, and they'd set up chairs, and everybody would go see the movie.
Well, unfortunately, our favorite open-air theater in Psyri now has become a restaurant.
Oh.
But there is still one in Thision, which is not far away.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this one has closed, but the theaters still remain.
You know, a lot of people like to see murals, street art. and there's graffiti and there's actually street art. And I was told in Greece, if you don't want your building tagged by a bunch of ugly graffiti, let a street artist do your building. And there's an unwritten law among people who run around in the wee hours of the morning with a can of spray paint. They don't mess up a building that has a piece of street art. And you find beautiful, beautiful murals that are artistic in themselves. And it's sort of a new kind of art all over Europe that gives voice to people who are otherwise voiceless. What's your take on the street art in Athens?
Well, I prefer it than the tagging. I really love graffiti as an art. They make murals, but you can find some smaller ones all over Athens. It's not anymore in this touristy area. They mm-hmm. are everywhere. So Inno, it's, I think, a number one graffiti artist in Greece. And he is the one that has performed miracles. So he has completely transformed neighborhoods and made them a little bit more attractive and interesting. And now most of these murals, followed with a QR code, where you can use your phone, and it's like a map, and it can take you to the next one, which is the closest work of art.
Oh, that is great. Mm-hmm. I love that. And also, if you're a little bit curious about the street art in a broader context, I'm sure there's tour guides like you that mm-hmm. do tours of the street art, and it's changing all the time, so you have to be up to date, and that is something to be mindful of. Effie, it's been so great talking with you, and we've talked about kind of the predictable neighborhoods here. What would your one more favorite neighborhood that we should know about be? Maybe the new Siri or something like that.
Now everybody's focused in this area, which is actually near where I live, right by the water, where is Stavros Niarchos Cultural Center. There is the home of the new National Opera, the new National Library, surrounded by a big park, connected to a marina that was built for the Olympics of 2004.
And what is the name of that neighborhood?
It's called Kalithea, actually.
Is that, how would you spell that?
It's K-A-L-L-I-T-H-E-A. Kalithea. Kalithea.
And can you get there by the subway that goes from downtown Athens out to Piraeus?
Not yet. There is one subway which is going to be built for this specific building, but there are mm-hmm. multiple public buses. Plus, the hop-on, hop-off buses that people can take to wander around the city. Plus, a free shuttle bus from Syntagma Square, I think every half hour. And it's daily from morning till dawn. And people can get there. Even by taxi, it's such a short distance, like 10 minutes from Syntagma Square.
Effie Pepperi, such a delight to talk with you. Next time I'm in Greece, will you show me around that neighborhood?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, Efferisto.
Παρακαλώ, thank you.
Up next, we get two perspectives on how traveling to another culture can change how you see others and learn to appreciate other religions on their own terms. A Christian Arab American shares what he's come to admire about Islam, and an Episcopal deacon provides insight into a Tibetan Buddhist tradition. Thanks for coming with us today. It's Travel with Rick Steves.